Hello, hello. Welcome to the You Are Covered podcast. I'm Hannah Lynn Miller. I am your host today. I am so glad you have clicked on this podcast. Thanks again. Every time I see, you know, the audience numbers grow and everything on this podcast, I'm blown away. So thanks ahead of time for spending some time with me. This podcast episode, we are going to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly of marriage in a way, but it's going to be creative and fun. You're not even going to know what hit you. It's not going to be all serious. And we're going to talk about it. We're going to talk about marriage. We're going to talk about weddings to break up kind of the seriousness. But we're going to start off with something that I've been kind of studying a little bit. I'm not in any means, I wouldn't say, here's the thing. I have been learning a lot about betrayal trauma because that is the clientele that I have in my in the private practice that I'm working for. And I just wanted to point out a few themes, maybe just let you know that to be aware of these things. And if you are not married, if you haven't been in a dating relationship that has gone this way, and maybe if you have a friend that has been through this, you could help them out. But we're going to start with talking about betrayal trauma in relationships with partners. And we're just going to talk about some of the psychology of it. I did a little bit of research just to take like the big broad what's going on in psychology when we talk about betrayal trauma. And then we're going to talk about the what you can do practically, what can help. I've been lucky enough to see a few really amazing couples really come out on the other side of it. And it's really been cool to watch. It's actually been some of my favorite work this summer. And I've learned a lot. So I'm hoping to share that all with you guys. I think it's just important to know about because it happens in relationships and you can recover from it. The other thing that we're going to talk about at the end of this podcast is why Old Testament couples are not role models for marriage. So we're going to talk about that as well. And then in between, because John and I had our 5th year wedding anniversary, I know it's crazy. The time just flew by. We're going to talk about weddings and trends. So found this article from Vogue. And sorry, I am huffing and puffing again. It is because of this 33 weeks. Y'all, I am 33 weeks and counting down, but sometimes in the morning, it's just harder to breathe. I don't know why, but little girl is suffocating me. So let me catch my breath. Yeah, my watch just said, your heart rate rose above 120 beats per minute while you seem to be inactive for 10 minutes. Wow, that's annoying. My watch doesn't know that I'm pregnant. Someone needs to tell Apple that they need to have like a setting to so that I don't freak out. It's because talking about weddings stresses everybody out. Or it can excite you. Like, I think thinking about my wedding after it's all said and done, it really excites me and makes me happy. It was such a fun, magical day for John and I, and I just wanted to encourage you, if you're planning a wedding, to just get creative, have fun with it, make it your own, and we're going to talk about some of the trends in 2023 that are unique and fun. I know Vogue had a lot of celebrities chime in, and so I don't really care about that. I just like brainstorming, and so I think it was interesting to me, Vogue's take on the 2023 trends for wedding season. So we're going to talk about that too. But first, I have a few things to tell you about before we dive into the topic of the day, okay? First off, these are things that we need to cover, okay, before we get started. I'm taking on brand coaching clients. I do this once a year. I don't pack a lot of people in. So once you reach out and you pick a time in my calendar, the link is down below. If I get to the max number of people, I will not be taking any more. Again, this is once a year that I do this. I take on brand coaching clients. It's around the holiday season that amps up to the new year. And that's why I take on these clients at this time. So if you want to hop on a Zoom call and get one-on-one coaching from me on how to start your brand or your ministry by building on social media, please hit that link down in the show notes. It's going to be so much fun. You can do a one session. It's an intro session. And I think it's great. I think that you could do that and you'd be set. I'm only charging $50. It's simple. It's easy. We get on a call and we work on your dream for your business. And we work on a marketing plan. And I audit your website and your social media platforms, okay? So it's just a good way to get started. And then also, if you wanted to do a month-long coaching session, you can. And we talk about that during the first meeting. So no commitments. Click down in the show notes for that link, that calendar link to get started. And then the other thing that I wanted to cover with you is that if you want to support this podcast so I can continue to create fun and empowering content, please visit. It's on Spotify. It is in the show main page on Spotify. It's podcasters.spotify.com/pod/show/youarecovered/support. I'll also have that link down in the show notes. And the support can start from like 99 cents a month to $10. And let me just tell you, John and I really appreciate it. I love doing this. This is fun for me, but I also know that it does take time and resources. And so if you think that it's important to continually have Christian content out there that does talk about mental health and in a fun way and engaging way and get more guests on and I can spend more time and effort into this podcast, please partner with me. That would be amazing. I'd really appreciate it. And then we can get started in doing more fun things with the You Are Covered podcast. So anyways, we covered all the things. Let's get started. Breaking the trust, understanding betrayal trauma in relationships. Again, this is going to be more of the psychology behind betrayal trauma. And it means that it's going to be an overview when we'll get more into specifics on how this can affect marriage or partnerships. And in like a big and more of a specific area, right? So first off, betrayal trauma refers to experience of trauma caused by the betrayal of a trusted person or institution. Extensive research has been conducted to understand the impact, causes, and recovery from betrayal trauma. And according to a study published in Medical News Today, individuals are more likely to forget traumatic events that involve a high degree of betrayal. This phenomenon is referred to as betrayal blindness. Psychology Today highlights that betrayal is common in interpersonal traumas and is an integral part of the harm caused by trauma. The theory of betrayal trauma proposed by Jennifer Freid suggests that individuals may experience betrayal trauma when they are terrified, sometimes for their physical safety or life. And one study explored the association between social support and post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, symptom severity among betrayal trauma survivors. The results indicated that social support is a significant indicator of PTSD symptoms severity among such individuals. It is important to note that amnesia for childhood abuse, referred to as forgetting of traumatic experiences, can occur due to the necessity for survival, as not knowing about abuse by a caregiver is often crucial. These sources provided valuable insights for the impact and causes of coping mechanisms related to betrayal trauma. So there's sources here, and I'll list them in the show notes if you want to check that out. I also have a blog post that I'm going to post on this topic. Okay, betrayal trauma in marriage. Betrayal trauma in marriage refers to the trauma caused by a violation of trust by one partner in a committed relationship towards the other. The betrayed partner may feel hurt, angry, and experience feelings of betrayal resulting in marital conflict and distress. Infidelity is one of the common forms of betrayal trauma in marriage, and it can result in significant emotional fallout. The wrong spouse may feel unlovable, humiliated, rejected, and experience extreme anxiety and fear. But although infidelity is one significant cause of betrayal trauma in marriage, it is not the only. Other forms of betrayal can include emotional neglect, abandonment, physical abuse, sex addiction, pornography use. Recovering from betrayal trauma in marriage requires both individual and joint efforts of the partners. Communication, honesty, and trust are key factors in the healing process. Counseling sessions and support groups are also recommended for couples dealing with betrayal trauma in marriage. So a lot of the times what happens is we'll do a session individually, like separately, where one has one partner has their own counselor that's trained in betrayal trauma. Then we'll have another one that is trained more in sex addiction or whatever the issue is that's specific for that partner. The betrayal partner is the one that I usually work with, and I've really enjoyed it. It feels really honoring to be the person that can come alongside and empower an individual who has gone through betrayal trauma like this. Betrayal trauma because of a porn addiction. This can definitely happen in marriage and occur due to a partner's pornography addiction. When one partner engages in a secretive and compulsive act and use of pornography, it can result in feelings of betrayal, hurt, and breakdown of trust in a relationship. The non-addicted partner may experience a range of emotions, and this includes shock, anger, sadness, and diminished sense of self-worth. So what you're working on a lot is how to feel those emotions, because usually when that happens, your one emotion that you go to is anger. And that can be really painful. It can be really hard to figure out, how do I actually feel the other emotions when they feel so vulnerable? And it feels so vulnerable to communicate emotions with my partner when I'm so hurt. And so those are things that you work through with a professional in therapy. And it's a serious thing. Don't ever have anybody tell you that it's not. It is a real serious thing, and it can be really harmful to both individuals, but also to a marriage relationship. Okay, so symptoms, definitely anger. And anger can come in different ways, and I'm going to break this down more in the blog post with symptoms of betrayal trauma. A lot of it can be like loss of memory. It could be feelings of just not being able to focus, just a lot of anxiety. There can be, you could potentially have a lot of times where you're just blanking or just not being able to engage with what's going on in your life at the present time. There can be a lot of, like I said, anger, a lot of outbursts, feelings of just your self-esteem being demolished. So you'll have a lot more just questioning who you are, your decisions, just a lot more uneasiness and unrest. And again, I'm going to put the full list on the blog post on hannahlynnmiller.com for you. Recovery from betrayal trauma. So there's a couple of steps that we do. And again, the really cool part is doing it as a couple and being able to recover that way. And even if, you know, maybe the relationship doesn't work out in the end, at least the betrayal partner will have some of the answers and will have some more resolve. And I think that's really healing for that individual. So what happens is we talk about boundaries. Then we'll also have a letter being written up to the addict about how that made the betrayed partner feel and what they're experiencing, so that the addict partner will have more of an understanding, because a lot of times they don't actually know how this actually will make the betrayed partner feel. And sometimes that can happen with two counselors and or therapists and the two clients. And then what you do next is you talk about next steps, which is a full disclosure. So the addict partner, and when I say that, I'm saying like we do a broad like sex addict. We use a lot of that language, addiction language, to describe what is going on with porn use and then also with any kind of infidelity. So we'll talk about full disclosure. So the betrayed partner will make a list of questions that they have, and then with their therapist, they'll bring the questions to the other partner and their therapist. And it's very transactional. It's non-emotional. It is a very let's get everything out on the table. And that can also happen where if it's safe, where the client can do it themselves. After that, then there's going to be a reading of the letter from the betrayed partner. She's going to read everything of how that makes her feel after hearing all those things. And so in therapy, you're going to be going through all of all of the emotions, not just the anger, right? And then when everybody's ready, the addicted partner will be the one who will apologize and say how it has affected him hearing the other partner's perspective. So I hope that gives like a little brief. I mean, obviously there's a lot more to it, but that's like a little bit brief of how a marriage relationship can get fixed or can have healing after betrayal trauma. But there's so much more work into that. And I have this book that my supervisor told me to read and to work on. And so that's what we go through. It's Facing Heartbreak. And yeah, I think it's a great tool for people couples who've experienced this kind of trauma. And it's not fun. The lies are really what makes it traumatic. So, but there is so much hope with healing in these relationships, and maybe not in the relationship, but you know, there could be healing for that individual who has experienced a betrayal trauma. So again, those are some heavy themes, but I think that it's really good to talk about because it affects a lot of couples. And I'm really enjoying this work. So again, establishing boundaries is like the first step. And it's important for both partners to recognize that healing from betrayal trauma may take time and concert effort, but it can be beneficial to seek support from professionals who specialize in addiction and trauma to guide the healing process and provide the necessary tools for recovery. And if you or someone you know is experiencing betrayal trauma in a relationship due to a partner's pornography addiction, it is advisable definitely to seek professional help and support to navigate the challenges and work towards healing and rebuilding the relationship. And I am focusing in on betrayal trauma and working with betrayed partners. So if this is you, please don't hesitate. I would love to work with you. I offer telehealth in Illinois and in-person sessions in Chicago. And so reach out for any kind of betrayal trauma specific therapy. And you can visit hannahlynnmiller.com/therapy to get more information. But really, you just right there, you email me and we'll get you started. So that's just a little bit of an information dump for you if you're more interested in what this actually looks like and more symptoms and questions and resources. I'm going to put more resources on the blog post as well. Please head to hannahlynnmiller.com. You will find it in the therapy section of my blog. Wedding Fashion Trends for 2023. And again, I just like doing this because it gives you ideas. It's a lot of brainstorming. It's so much fun to just think about. And one big trend that I thought was interesting, and I guess I never thought about this before because I guess a lot of weddings to me seem to be very typical with the timing of things. You have dinner, right? So then all of the ceremony has to be in the afternoon, and then you go to do dinner. But there's something called midday ceremonies, and I think this is really interesting. I guess I just never thought about the timing where you could possibly have a morning ceremony, and then during the day, that's when the guests can take a break. They can go back to the hotels. They can explore the area. If they're coming from out of town, you could have like brunch or something to provide for after the ceremony. And then that's when the couple can do their pictures with the whole group, and it's not a big rushed thing. I feel like it was very rushed for me and pictures, and everybody was hungry by the time we were done with pictures, where if you did something in the morning, you'd have all day and it would be an all day event. I think weddings in general tend to be an all day event for most people. And so if you have a wedding, you're planning that Saturday or Friday to just be doing the wedding thing. So for me, I'm like, if this couple is important enough to you, you're probably already planning on taking a whole day off anyways to travel and do all the things. So a morning ceremony is kind of nice. Sometimes it can be cheaper too. And then at night you'd have the reception and it would be a party and people would be refreshed. I like that idea. There's also the midday ceremonies. This is where the whole wedding weekend is often the after party, but the idea of an 8-hour relay race from ceremony to cocktails to dinner to dance can give you a pause and can make sure your guests are ready to go all out by having a midday ceremony. So this would be just like a little bit earlier, not totally a morning wedding. So that's a trend. So that's something to think about, the timing of everything. I don't know why I just thought that's what you do. You start at 2 or something like that, and then or 3, but apparently that's not everybody's situation. I've been to a few weddings where it was just the morning ceremony, no real reception. Don't do that to your guests. Let people celebrate you guys starting off joining your lives together. Like, I think it should be a total party. I really do. Okay, so wild welcome parties, that's something that they do right before the day before the wedding. So people get together and they do something like a party. They have a DJ, maybe a barbecue, a lunch. My cousin's doing like, they're going to like a brewery. So they're having like maybe more of an informal, hi, good to see you. Because you just don't have time at the wedding. It's so crazy. You don't have time. So being able to do that beforehand would be nice. I know a lot of times that's when the rehearsal dinner is. So you could do the rehearsal, you could do the dinner, and then maybe have guests come say hi after the dinner. And it would be more of a nighttime thing. And then they also talk about dramatic ceilings at weddings. So this is like more of a decoration thing, preference. There's more of a dramatic florals and lighting and draping. That's a big trend in 2023. I think that's kind of fun. And then also over the top cakes and cake toppers, that can get so pricey, but you know, they can make it fun. I don't know, like you serve it with big scoops of ice cream and then pizza maybe and some espresso. It could be a big thing. I know John and I had a donut cake because it was so fun. It was totally on brand for me at the time. And I loved it. It was a total surprise. I told my mom the things that like I really cared about and the things I didn't. And she just took the things that I wasn't like, yes, I have to have it this way. And she went with it, and it was so cute. I loved it. Okay. Statement aisles. The S-shaped or serpentine designs were ideas. Some of these, again, I'm reading from Vogue. Some of these clients embraced. They had a Palm Beach wedding this spring at the Four Seasons with a gently curved aisle. So that's kind of new and exciting, I guess. That's like something different. I was so glad that my aisle was long because it just goes so fast, and it's kind of nice to be able to just take it in You can see the whole ceremony. You can see all the people that are there, and people can look like that's when you're showing off the gown. Okay. It is your runway. That is what I, that's how I pictured it. So I definitely had a long veil and then I had a long aisle, and I think that's fun. So that's cool that they said having more of a curve in the aisle. Interesting. Color. While this is not a new idea, what is fun to report is that it's lasting. Couples are not shying away from color, but instead we are seeing our couples embrace thoughtful color references through patterns, textiles, illustrations, floral concepts, costume, decor, moments, and their bridal fashion, And that's Augusta Cole. These are all, I think these are wedding planners at Vogue that are working with Vogue. My clients want an unabashed color, wild patterns, luscious flowers, and moments of unexpected delight. A playful palette encourages fun. I totally agree. I am big on even like the photography nowadays that weddings have. Sometimes it can be a little bit more muted. And I did not want that. I had a vibrant color palette. I had vibrant flowers. And even though my style and taste maybe is a little bit less colorful these days, I think I'd still go with that because it's fun and it's a celebration. And I think color is a celebration. Intimate ceremonies. This is another thing that is coming up in 2023. And it's just having like a smaller ceremony. And it really does lessen probably the anxiety. And you just have people that you care about at the ceremony, people that are close to you. And I get that. I so get that. It can be really beautiful and intimate. And I think that's really cool. Not for me, but I do think it should be a celebration. People are going towards like a Grace Kelly moment with their wedding dress, classic bridal style. And they're also loving a longer veil. I love my long veil. It was so fun. Okay. Tableside charcuterie. That's so fun. Honestly, if I would have done that again, I would have charcuterie at my wedding. It wasn't a thing in 2015. No, when did we get married? 2018. It wasn't as popular, and I didn't know my husband loved charcuterie as much as he loves. I knew he liked cheese, but we discovered charcuterie afterwards. This one was fun because me and my mom went to Speakeasy recently, and it was a lot of fun. But they have a Speakeasy-inspired after party after the wedding. So there's like secret doors, hidden lounge scene. You can make this a fun way to kind of break up the evening and allow for some post-party photos. Wedding hashtags are yesterday's news. It's all about stories instead of posts now. And story hashtags disappear after 24 hours. Dropping the self-promotional hashtag says influencer rather than influencer. It says influential rather than influencer. Which would you rather be? That's another designer that was talking about that. I had a hashtag, but that was, again, a different time. Uniform, bridesmaid dresses, offering your bridal party a sense of fashion autonomy is becoming norm. Helping your friends find custom individualized outfits. The idea of rewearing a wedding look is becoming more and more of a reality. I love that. I think it's very, very helpful for the bridesmaids. And I don't think that you should have to spend a ton of money on a bridesmaid dress so you're never going to wear. I think it's the most impractical thing. My bridesmaid spent $30 and wore tutus that they'll probably never wear again. But it was $30, you know? So, and then standing wedding parties. This is becoming a no-go as well. Having the ceremony set up and then letting people sit down who are in your wedding party. I think I've seen that happen. I think my roommate in college did that. And I think that was really nice because it was nice to be able to sit down and not have to stand with heels. My sister almost passed out at our wedding, and we told her not to lock her knees, but you know, when it's your first wedding and it's grass and you're in heels, it can be rough. It can really be rough. Welcome bags. Forego extravagant welcome baskets and write each guest or couple a handwritten note exuding thoughtful elegance. Hotels always have water bottles and no one needs another branded canvas tote bag. I think that's a good tip as well. Extravagant escort card walls. No more big card walls. Instead, opt for more classic display organized beautifully on a table, which encourages each guest to interact and mingle. That's an opinion. I don't think that matters too much. This one is really funny. This is the last one we're going to end on. It says fireworks. Ditch the fireworks, save money, and save the planet. And again, it's Vogue, and it's just funny, but I loved the fire. We had sparklers. We didn't have fireworks. We had sparklers, and I'm pretty sure they're illegal in Illinois, and they were legal in Indiana, but my mother-in-law found them for us, and they were colorful. Like, they, like, when I say, like, these were not sparklers that were, like, silvery or white or whatever. No, they were, like, full color, full-blown, huge sparklers. Like, big. And everybody had one, and that's how we got out of the wedding. And it was just so much fun. So, again, these are some trends, but take it with a grain of salt. Also, I think that your wedding should definitely reflect you and your partner. And I do think that it's a celebration of a marriage, a beautiful thing. And so you should have fun with it. So that's some of the trends for 2023 to get some ideas on what to do and what not to do. And again, make it your own. Why the Old Testament couples are not role models for marriage. I was in John's office the other week, and I, you know, it's an older church, so there's things that I'm constantly looking at things that I'm like, okay, we could clean some of this out. So in his new office, he changed like locations or something, and we were kind of cleaning up the area and just kind of looking at things, and there's a lot of extra books in this room. And so I was like reading some of the titles, and I'm always curious about marriage books because, you know, you never know. So this one was definitely written in the 70s, and I pick it up and it's talking about, forget what the title was, but it was something about marriage advice from the Bible or something like that. And so I'm flipping through it, and I wish that I could actually take a page and read it to you. I forgot to grab it, but essentially, it was taking every big, like, name, like, every couple that you can think, like, Abraham and Sarah, Rebecca, Rachel, and Joseph. Like, it's talking about all of these couples that we know about, that we've read in the Bible, and it was giving marriage advice. And it was so dumb and so bad. And I could not believe it was published by a major Christian publisher at the time. And it just proves to me, if people don't think that sexism existed in the church, it definitely existed other places. But if they think that it didn't exist in the church, you are wrong, my friend. Read some of these old books, okay? I will give you a few and you will see. It's shocking how just their hermeneutics were so bad and sexist. It was just insane. Anyways, and it's not everybody was like that. It's not every situation, but I was really shocked by this book. And again, it was a major Christian publisher back in the day. But basically, so one of the things was talking about how could Joseph make sure that Rachel didn't have jealousy, wasn't struggling with jealousy. Now, if you know this story, how about not married two women? How about we just start there? Like, why don't we just talk about that? Like, what about not marrying her sister? Like, that is just, so it's Leah and Rachel. And so they're talking about that whole situation. And it's one of the questions, and I'm like, what? That's so weird. And I don't think that was the answer in the book. Like, I think it was something else. And it's just, it was just so wild. I cannot even tell you. There was a couple other, I should actually bring that out and just use it as an example again down the road of what not to do with hermeneutics, because that's not the point of the story. And it's not a marriage book. Should never have, it's never a guideline for marriage, especially not these couples that where the man is married to multiple women. That's ridiculous. Like, no. If you read the Old Testament, it's there to point to how holy God is and how men are not. Okay, so we should never, ever use them as examples in marriage. There's a few passages of scripture that we go to for marriage, and we can see how God honors marriage and views it, but the narratives are not that way. It is to look at, to get a guideline on what not to do. I mean, have you read how many times Abraham screwed up? Okay. That dude makes me mad. He just makes me mad. He makes me so mad. He just seems like such a coward. If you really read these stories, man. So anyways, and a lot of times I point to this because, you know, in our own marriages and in our own families and people in our own lives, we have messy situations. We've put up with a lot. We've seen a lot of things. And it's not to say that that person is horrible, but this is real life. And we have a holy God that we get to point to, not these characters in the Bible. So if anybody is uplifting character in the Bible, they're missing the point. The point is to point to God, to Jesus Christ, because he is holy. And there, you know, there's a few men that we can look at, and they're kind of like Jesus characters in the Old Testament. And I would even use that very loosely, where they're redemptive and they are used as redeemers, like a redeemer character. So that's what you would pull out of the narrative. And I think a big one would be, of course, let me see, Boaz. If you read the story of Boaz, he was a redeemer. He was sacrificially loving Ruth, who was not from his neck of the woods. Okay. And then the other person would be Joseph, Jesus's earthly dad. There's nothing in there that says anything beyond him sacrificially loving women. And that's really the women that God placed in their lives. And that's really what, you know, that's what we look at as examples for a husband in a marriage, right? So those two guys, that's all I see. I don't know. So the first place that I would probably start with is probably talking about the word submission. What does that actually look like? This is just my opinion, but it is found in two places where the word shows up and it refers to marriage. The rest of the verses that has to do with submission to God, it's overarching for all of us. One verse is the one that pastors just love to quote. It's, wives submit to your husbands. That's Ephesians 5, 22 through 24. The emphasis is on the verses of 5, 25 through 33. And this is where Paul talks so much about the husband's role, which, by the way, is a heavy one. It's a hard one. It's harder than, I think, what the wives are called to do. And it's to love their wives sacrificially like Christ loved us. How did Christ love us? He died. Okay? So it's giving up your life in such a way to your wife that you are essentially dying to yourself, right? Jesus died for us, and that's what husbands are called to do, not wives. And to be honest, I don't see this a lot. I don't see this a lot in Christian marriages. It's not talked a lot about, okay? And that needs to change. And yeah, if you are with me, let me know, because this I would like to see a little bit more of. But it's in there. It's in scripture. And this plays into femininity. It's what really helps a woman be able to feel safe enough to rely on a man and her spouse. Because, you know, if someone's really loving you in that way, that they're making huge sacrifices, I mean, yeah, you're gonna listen to what they say. You're gonna respect them, because that takes a lot of work, right? That's hard. So that's really the emphasis, I think, that needs to be on marriages, is the husband's role. The other thing to note about this word submission is that it's mentioned right at the beginning of chapter 5. And it talks about what husbands and wives submitting to each other. You know, because that's what makes a relationship work. It's when you guys are communicating and you're taking into consideration what the other person's feeling, and you aren't causing the other person to provoke by jealousy. You are communicating and asking what is really what makes you upset. Why are you all of a sudden anxious? What makes you anxious? Those things, submitting to each other, right? And it's a submitting to one another out of a reverence for Christ and just remembering what he did for us. And I think that's a beautiful example of what marriage should and could be. And I think that it's interesting when we point to Old Testament characters as an example of marriage. I'm not for it. I don't recommend it. And so I would definitely check out that verse, and it talking about husband and wife submitting to each other. That's in Ephesians 5:22. And further, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. So that's all the things. Check it out. I have a blog post on what betrayal trauma really is and how to get started with therapy. And then I also want to remind you that I'm on all the things. You can find me on YouTube, Hannah Lynn Miller. You can also follow us on You Are Covered Podcast, Facebook and Instagram. And then every other platform is Hannah Lynn Miller. Okay, guys. Well, thank you for joining me. And be sure to share this episode if it was helpful. I am so glad I get to do this with you. And remember, you are covered and Jesus got you.